Hello. On the 18th of June 2009, I'm doing another podcast and taking another walk, and not so much has happened, really. Except that I've kind of reconnected with some of these old people I knew. And it's interesting to study or think about how little people change once they reach a certain age. And I would say the teenage years. Once they enter the teenage years, a personality generally is formed that stays there forever. And a habit of behaving is formed that stays there forever. Well, that's it, really. That was all I want to say about that. Because nothing seemed to have changed, really. There's nothing wrong with that. It's good to see that people are happy. Because that seems to be the case with most of them. So here I am taking a walk in the forest again. And today will be a bit different day, a bit of a different day. And yeah, I don't know if I have that much to say, really. I'm thinking a lot today. I've been long-term unemployed for quite some time now. And when you're long-term unemployed, they have something called the work psychologist that they want you to go to. And I don't know what this is, really. But it sounds that it's not going to be fruitful, that's for sure. That's my impression of that field of study. It is basically not involved with doing anything else than creating vegetables. So I don't really know what I'm supposed to expect from it. And I honestly don't know either. I imagine that it's the way they want to categorize you. Because you've been unemployed for such a long time. So they want to put you in their category, have their files on you, on your psychological profile, your personality type, your cognition, and your to study all of the fields of your brain, to make sure they have everything on you. Since you've been away from employment, they don't have anything, or they don't have it in their standardized way, I guess. I don't know. But this is the unemployment office that has been hiring psychologists that are supposed to, I don't know, probably categorize your mind or something. And I don't know, it's I thought initially, living in Sweden, that there would be a lot of help available for those who are unemployed, in the sense that, yeah. Well, but I feel that the unemployment office has not really done much. They have very high, well-paid people working there, but they don't do anything, you know, really fruitful to you. If you're unemployed, you're unemployed for a reason, mostly. In my case, I'm living in a small town here in Sweden called Mora, and I can't really move. And there aren't many employers here. And the main employers here where I live is the industry, the steel industry. And I have scoliosis, so I can't lift continuously through the days like you have to do. And even those who have a completely straight back, they are unable to, they actually destroy their backs in that kind of work, many of them, even if your back is perfectly fine, because it's heavy lifting throughout the day. So that's the kind of employment they have here. Then obviously they have, you know, some work as well. But but it's like in every town, you obviously have some, you know, we have schools and we have some politicians, not really politicians, but we have obviously stores and we have a hospital here. So there obviously are some work, other work. There are some companies, so there are some economists working here as well. And you have, a company of all kinds. You have a firm that is cleaning stuff, cleaning up stuff. You have a firm that is, or quite a few, you know, of these kind of things. And you have those doing things in building houses, and, you know, if you want someone who to make a well, a water well, or to fix something, you know, in the garden, whatever. So you have, you know, small entrepreneurs and so on also. But mostly, for most people, it's a steel industry in Mora, where I live. And we have another town nearby called Orsa, which is known to be the opposite. In Orsa, people didn't work. They lived basically very poor, but survived. And there was not much work. But the Mora people are known for this steel factory. In fact, internationally, the Mora knife comes from this place. Steel knife that's been copied by the Asians. And we have water, tap water cranes, or what you call, you know, steel. Also from Mora. It's known, it's sold in the entire world. So we're a big supplier of these steel things. And there's a lot of carrying involved here of this steel. And that's where I try to work for 6 weeks or so and destroy my back, you know, in 6 weeks' time. And they've been trying to get me into this unemployment office, time and time again. And basically, I've myself met all these people. We have another field as well here, where I live, in Mora. And that's the elderly care, which is quite a big field as well. There are still a lot of elderly living in Mora. The younger people have left. So, but we have elderly care, and that means also a lot of lifting, actually. It's less lifting than the steel factory, but it's still lifting. And I worked there too for a while. And it's a very stressful work, and it's not really, the right decisions are not made by the authorities. By the employer, the right decision is not made who to keep. It's a very fascistic type of economically run system of control and drugging. They drug the elderly like crazy, and they die like flies. And And basically, so these are the two main industries. And then we have the school, of course, that employs a bit, because there are still children being born here. The kindergarten also, But it's the steel factories, and there's also an antenna factory making antennas called Vibe here. But these are the main place, and they're working with steel, and they're also doing. There's another factory that does safe, a safe that you store valuables in. They make a safe in 15 minutes, and they work there for like 10 years and just lift, and they get a low pay. So that's the kind of thing that exists here. And it's really not. So the unemployment office always tries to get you into one of these main employers, because that's. So they took me. They put me on a course that was. One-year course in learning steel industry, and they still couldn't get me out there because of my back problems. And also, I really hate factories, I hate it, and there's nothing worse than sitting in a factory. That's really becoming just a cog in the wheel in the machine, never seeing daylight and so on. And since I have my lone father as well, it's a it's kind of difficult because the factory wants you to work late evenings and so on. So it's quite kind of impossible. So they've been trying that, and they've been spending loads of money, tax money, on me. That hasn't resulted in anything for me at all. I have not gotten anything out of it. But they have their bureaucracies and their rules, and they follow them. They just have their methods. They've known it worked before, and they know even if it doesn't work, that they do it anyway, So that's the way it is. And sometimes I feel liking the unemployment office because I do receive money from them, and generally they don't have much demands on you. You look for work and that's it. And it doesn't take so much time to look for work. And they have loads of integrity rules, so they can't really, force anything onto you. Well, they depends on the person really, but official, really they cannot. they can claim they can, and so on. But to be honest with you, there's very little they can do against you. It all comes down to that you want their money, you know. And so that's really the basic thing. And people live here. I've talked to a lot of people in this town, and people live entire lives here on a very low income. And with loans, they can have 2,000 euros in loans that stay with them their entire life, you know, once they get it. Because they never get the kind of money to pay off that kind of loan. So that's the life they live. And I previously went to a school where people had so much money they didn't have time to spend it. And, you know, they're still flying around, jet setting, daily, you know. And this is the difference in person, in what I've seen in my life, you know. I went to, because I had my, when you go to a school with people, and they weren't, you know, these were my friends, because there were no factions, you know, or what's it called, of the poor and the rich. Everyone who was a Swede was a friend, because there were so few Swedes and Swedish people. So, actually, anyone who was a Scandinavian was a friend. But obviously, it differs very much. And if I had, you know, stick to my guns, not getting a family, maybe I would have been different today. I don't know. But now since I've been unemployed for such a long time, I think, you know, they start to believe that there's something else wrong with me or something like that. So, in either way, I don't have any references nowadays. So, it's kind of like... So, I don't know. And here in Sweden, they have a drive for all the unemployed. They should get coaches. And it was these coaches that eventually came up with the idea through some person who was the same person who you know, thought that I should work in the steel factory, even though I have my back isn't as it should be for lifting, you know. And they're just not humane people, some of them. So basically they're telling you to stop asking for their money in a weird way. And I'm, you know, you get it anyway, as long as you're unemployed and have been looking for work. So that's my life, you know. It's been like that for quite some time now. I started being unemployed around 2000 or so. Actually, initially, for a couple of years, I was taking care of children, my children. But you get money for that, too, from the state. But still, I haven't been really having a permanent employment since 2000. And, you know, you grow up. Things happen in 9 years. Maturity and so on. But and it's a socialized structure that is terrible, really. And this is why most people, I think, go for these independent works or higher works or whatever, because it's not so much that you need the money, it's more that you just need to get away from this hellish lower level system where life has no value to, and there is no humaneness. You're just a cog in the wheel, and people die, you know, There's nothing. There's no real empathy. There's nothing. It's a efficient machine. And nowadays, my personal opinion is this machine has as its main purpose to kill people, because we don't need. Technology has reached such a high level now that many of the jobs are not needed. Like in the steel factory, they have robots today. And these robots can do a lot of work, and, you know, and the sick part about all of this is that a lot of the work that is done in the steel factory today is work that that they could easily allow a machine to do, but, you know, out of charity, or, you know, is this work we want to work idea, you know, we want to help you by making sure you can work. You don't get really paid better than you get when you're not working, but you get a chance to work. And I've talked to these women who've really been unemployed all their life, and then they enter the some kind of state financed system for their illnesses, and then they get to work and they start developing their personality, or that they're hard working steel factory women, and basically they try to make you respect their bloody work, and they try to develop your hierarchy, and you're below them in their bloody hierarchy because they're working in the steel factory. And I know personally that the state is paying their salary, not the company. The company would never pay them, because, you know, and it's so socialized today. So a lot of people are working. When they do get a work, it's paid for by the state. If I get a work now, I can work for 2 years at a much lower price for the employer, because the state will pay, I think it is 50% the salary or something like that. So and there's really no care for the weak either. You would expect kind of like that in a socialistic system like Sweden, it would be what I thought it was a place where the weak were taken care of, but it's not. It's really a place for those with the opportunists to run. And the socialist system, what I've noticed, you know, is that it's used to the maximum degree by those who could get a work anyway. And those who don't get a work, you know, because, as I said, the unemployment office is not there to help you get a work. It's really there to control that you're looking for work. They have this holy natural law of, you know, the market forces somehow. But everyone, it's very sad, really. It's a very sad thing. The whole system is very sad. And there are many women that I met who are on some kind of SSRI medication to keep up their self-esteem. And they're working hard. Women especially seem to be hardwired to work hard in this system. And they notice when they're working hard that they're not happy. And they question themselves and question, you know, the world. And they say, well, I'm not happy. So they go to the doctor, the expert, on health. And he says, well, you take this pill and you will be happier. It has a side effect, and that's that some people commit suicide. But so we don't really want you to take it. But if you're unhappy, we can still give it to you. This is generally what they say. They advise the patient to not take it, because many of these people are suicidal, these women, when they go there. And some of this medication has a stated side effect, suicide. So they give them medication. And I think it's just closely related to the Exit International, the organization that wants to allow people to take a pill and just die. Because these, and, you know, but I think Len Keeley has a point when he says that people are hardwired. They're hardwired to they're hardwired to basically do something, and as long as people cannot break out of their programming, you know, in this system we live in, some people are just unhappy because they're not programmed to function in the system, and it's changing and so on. And many of these women cannot break out. They want security and sovereignty, and because of that, they they go on with whatever it is. They go on in their work until their back is totally destroyed. And as I said, I've talked to these women who can't even lift. If when they move to a new apartment, they can't even do that because they can't lift anything. They can't lift a packet of milk. And these unemployment officers, they will not advise them to stop their work, you know. And eventually they're totally destroyed. And this happens in our democratic country. There's no comeback. There's no complaint to anyone, you know. It's the way it works. It's the work moral of Sweden in these country towns that don't really have the kind of employment that you see in like the capital. In the capital of Stockholm, you have all kinds of employment. I checked out one classmate of mine from when I went to school in Stockholm, who currently has an internet shop where she sells basically luxuries to put in your apartment. Totally unnecessary things, which can look good. And obviously, you see, if you want to earn money, you have to give your attention to people who have money. And people who have money, they don't really care about the price anyway. And they don't care about the things that... So this is true, you know, if you want to earn money, don't do what the poor people do, you know. And I don't know how much money this woman earns. I know it's difficult, but there was an article in the internet world where she was interviewed. And... and basically bah. she's selling these things, and there's nothing wrong with that. But my point is, it's people who buy things, and I know these people, buy things they don't need, but they like them. It's a materialistic kind of thing. And that's obviously where you should, if you're good at making a good impression or at finding beauty in things like that, and she seems to be quite okay in that, because some of the things she's selling is quite nice, but it's expensive. It's the price of a computer. You know, you could buy a box there that you put things in that cost 4,000 Swedish kronor. It's 400 euros. So it's expensive stuff. And she gets them from Asia, that where they're done by the inhabitants over there, and they're done by the raw material, you know, they find in the forest and so on. So my guess is the price that these people in Asia get for each of these boxes is like a 1% or so of what she sells them for. So you can have a huge profit involved here if you buy directly from the seller, but obviously there are middle hands who take things, and there is a transportation and so on. But that's the kind of thing you can make a living on. There is no way to make a living on being decent, really. So people who have this decency as their value system, they lose. You know, and in fact, by the system, they will be defined as sick. Because this system is defines you as healthy if you have a working, if you have a working work life, you know, then you're healthy. So it's basically, that's the way it is. So I don't know, it's just a very, this system, I don't see really anything coming out of it. But, you know, that's the way it is. And I don't really know how this is going to end. When you're unemployed and so on, kind of. And even if you have an employment, many people have an employment that is pretty, not very secure anyway. So, it's quite messy, a lot of things. If you look into people's lives, I believe, of the Generation X. The women, to a great extent, can make a living with some kind of work that they don't really earn that much. Like this internet shop she has, you don't need to have much of a profit if you have a man that provides for you. And men, many men, I think, work day and night. I mean, they work all the time. So they're the suppliers. And these are the men that have families. Many men don't have children today of the Generation X. But there are obviously other cases, you know, with men who do have children and are still not working and so on. But the majority, we see this tendency, because this is natural for the woman, wants security and sovereignty. She wants to be able to run the family and feel secure in it. And she gets that from a man who cares about her and earns money. That's how this is. That's all that is necessary in this system. And so once she finds that, she will start to try to get an income, you see. Yeah, and then, but obviously there are women who are hardworking too. But when I talk to them, I talked to one woman, I chatted with one woman who I used to go to some school as. And she's hardworking. She's been working all the time. And she's just so hardwired into her thinking that it was really terrible experience to talk to her. So I turned off the chat function after that experience. I managed to turn off the chat function. It actually is possible. So I like that. What I mean is Facebook will remember if you turn it off last time, so they won't have to do it every time you log in or start a session. And so now I can actually go to Facebook without chatting. But so I can withdraw a bit from that place, because it's otherwise it becomes a socializing tool. Because these people who chat, they wouldn't send me an email. You see, you have these people around that can chat with someone, but they would never send an email. And I think that tells a lot about how interested they are in you. You know, they just want to chat, you see. They want something happening. They don't want to be bored. They want to, you know, just tag along or fish along. You know, it's a go on and on and on. You know, ask short questions and so on. And sure, I mean, it depends on what you want to do on the internet, but if you really want to know someone, an email is fine. Email conversation is fine. But if you just want to surface layer, ask questions about where you live and what you do and so on, who you know, then chatting is obviously the tool. But if you want to know someone, then you can email them. And I have my email address. It's there, you know. So, you know, people who, and I met these people who only talk, one woman I knew, she would only talk to me on email, not in any other way. And I talked to her quite a lot. Then she got mad at me. But, but I think it's much nicer with email conversation, where you can choose when to reply, than a chat box, where you're forced to sit there, you know, all the time. And you're sitting in front of a computer, you know. So it's not really socializing anyway. I just didn't like it. People who don't have the interest to send me an email might as well leave me alone, you know. That's how I feel about the chat thing. That's why I turned it off. So, because there are a lot of socializing going on the internet, and it's a weird thing, just the thinking, how can you socialize on the internet? Think about it for a while, you know. But then they sit down in front of the television afterwards and discuss what they've, you know, or think about. And, you know, it's a, their entire cognition is controlled by this medium. But, yeah. So, So there are all kinds of people. The one person I talked to was abusive, and he actually told me that he had a problem with that. And he said, then I become abusive. But what he forgot that was that he had been abusive to me for like 100 emails, but he started to reply, when someone do this, I become abusive, you know. And he said like this, when I feel someone talks about me on the air, I become abusive towards them. And, you know, he contacting a podcaster, and I never mentioned his name, but I did, you know, think about what he said, because he was abusive. So he wanted to have a personal conversation with me, but I was not allowed to say anything on the air about him. And in the end, I told him, I never want to receive an email from you again for the rest of my life. And, you know, he got it. He understood then. And that ended the thing. Because first I tried to be serious and talk to him, you know. And it took a lot of energy away from me. And then he disappeared and he came back later. And I noticed, this is going to start again. Now it's going to start again. So I just had to end it altogether. And it worked. He'd left me alone then. So some people get it when you tell them like that. All you have to do is tell them. And, you know, blocking him was not enough. I could block him. Then he created a new email address and sent me stuff. But when I told him in an email, then he got it. So people are a bit different. But generally, it's possible to get along by just with people, as long as they leave you alone. And with Alan Watt, I think it's a bit different, because he claims to have the truth, and his shows become actually kind of addictive. And he's hiding a lot, and so when you become a big name like that, people do wonder and want to know who they're donating to and so on. He claims to have the solution, and he's been claiming that for years, and there's nothing coming out of him. He's just another entertainer, really. He has his place, for sure. But it's interesting this, how everything can be true at once, or it seems to be the case, almost as if everything can be true at once. And you know, as I said, I also listened to this Joe Blow conspiracy show, which kind of is good. Also, I do like Alan Watt and his stuff, in the sense that he helps people break out of this over-socialized structure. And it can be very helpful for people. You know. And for you, that, you know, this ultimate reality, you might not know about it. I've been talking about Glenn Keely and his audios and the unlisted audios. You know, they are no longer unlisted, or I mean, they are available now. Anyone can listen to them. These are about 20 audios that have not been out on BitTorrent trackers, or at least it's 15 that have not been out on BitTorrent trackers. So it's not part of this Glenn Keely audio archive that is out on BitTorrent trackers. There is actually additional audios done by GWAP360. Calling him up, and they're available through the blog antinewworldorder.blogspot.com. If you scroll down there, you will find in the right-hand column an orange button called, says listen or something. And if you click there, you get to this unlisted URL. And then you can download all of the MP3 files and start listening to this Glenn Keely stuff. Listen through it once so that you know what it is, because he does say a lot of interesting stuff. So now you know that. It's no longer a secret, this show, or that information. You know. So, I don't know. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. Strange world we live in. For sure. With multiple realities everywhere. There are worlds within worlds in this world we live in. And the people living in the big world won't react when someone living in the small world is treated badly, because they say, well, he's like that, so this is probably right. The expert is probably doing the right thing. The peacekeeper is probably doing the right thing to maintain the order where I'm happy. And if they don't maintain the order where I'm happy, who's going to do it? I might not be happy anymore then. So it's a weird world, and I don't really like this unemployment office at all. The stories I've heard from them are all bad, what they do. Everyone hates them, think they're mean. Mean-spirited people. So I don't trust them. And when I do trust them, I end up in trouble. And this is why I've started to believe in the information of Alan Watt initially, you know, because it fitted so perfectly with my experience. But that's it for now. Bye.